Before we start the show, we want to ask you, the Disconnected family, to please share the show on social media and invite friends and family to listen. Enable the notification bell so you never miss an episode, and please rate us with 5 stars wherever you're listening to us right now to keep this awesome show going. Might as well do it right now, that's fresh on your mind, right? We thank you and appreciate you. Enjoy the show. Due to the graphic nature of these killers' crimes, listener discretion is advised. This episode includes discussions of murder, animal cruelty, mutilation, cannibalism that some might find offensive. We advise extreme caution for children under 13. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Disconnected Podcast with Angel and Jesse. My name is Angel.
And my name is Jesse.
Yeah, it's good to be back, right?
Yeah, it's great to be back. I love doing this.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm getting used to doing the show.
Like, yeah, me too. I wake up, because we, spoiler alert, this is like behind the scenes thing. Yeah. We record on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
So like, I just know I have this, like, my body has this feeling every Monday night, like, oh, tomorrow is podcast
mode. Yeah, like, I have to get my notes ready.
Yes, exactly.
You always do, like, you finish
your notes. I do them the night before, all of them.
Yeah, no, I do them, like when we're finished with this episode, we already know what we're going to talk next week.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm finished with my notes for next week, like.
By the end of the night
or tomorrow. I'm like that.
Two different types of people, and we are those two different types of people.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, I'm getting used to doing the show, and I don't know, if we stopped doing it right now, I would honestly think I would miss it.
Yeah, me too. Like, I'd be like, there's something missing in my life.
Like on Tuesdays, like podcast Tuesdays. Like,
yeah. And if I don't do it, then I'm like, oh.
Yeah, like something like, oh.
I feel like I'm wasting my time. Like, I should be doing something.
Yeah, so we like this show. We like the podcast. We like the process of it, recording it. And
the notes and talking about it and just being able to share stories that we find interesting.
Very interesting, yeah. So today we're going to be talking about 2 serial killers.
Yes. Yeah,
but first of all, what's the first thing that pops into your head when you hear serial killer?
People who are most likely psychotic, and they're probably sociopaths as well.
Okay, but
and that they kill people with no remorse.
Okay,
multiple people.
All right. Well, when you hear serial killer, do you imagine in your head a male serial killer or a female serial killer?
I usually imagine male serial killers because they're more common, especially like.
Yeah, because people usually think of a demented male psychopath.
Mm-hmm. That's usually what media covers more. And there has been more male serial killers.
And there may not be as many female serial killers as their male counterparts.
Yes.
Although approximately 100 female serial killers have been identified since the year 1900.
Yeah, so they are out there.
Yeah.
But they're not as common.
Yeah. And this may sound shocking, but what will shock you even more is that the fact that many female serial killers are never identified. And this is because the methods of these predators are far superior to those of their male counterparts. Most women are deceitfully careful when committing their heinous crimes.
Yeah. Because I think it's because media covers more on male serial killers. So whenever there's a female one, they're like, that can't be possible. That is a dainty little lady right there.
Yeah.
And she's not.
I know. These female serial killers, they are meticulous in planning and disposing of any evidence that will link them to any crime.
Mm.
So they're smarter.
Yeah.
So due to strong cultural bias, society often denies the very existence of a female serial killer.
Mm.
Yeah, so whereas
that makes sense.
Yeah, So whereas the male serial killer has been regularly lionized by his outrageous exploits,
mm-hmm.
the female serial killer is typically ignored, viewed as an anomaly. Like
it's rare.
Yeah. So in the sick minds of those who murder, pain and death are twisted into a passion to kill. Unlike a normal individual, serial killers rely on murdering to fulfill their craving of their gruesome thrills and addictions. Most of society incorrectly views serial killers because of how they are portrayed in television.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like for example, Dexter is a handsome serial killer who does lead a normal life, but he takes it upon himself to get rid of all the bad guys in the world in order to accomplish his need to kill.
Yeah.
You know? And then there's Freddy Krueger. He gets revenge and kills people in their dreams, causing their death in the real world as well.
Oh.
Yeah. And Michael Myers and Dr. Hannibal Lecter are more examples of infamous serial killers. All of these exaggerated serial killers created are not only feared in movies and television shows, but in real life too. So, because of these movies,
We think serial killers are like...
Yeah, like ugly and all, like, you know.
Yeah, but in reality, a lot of them were able to do a lot of these things because they were charming.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they had the personality to, like, blend into society and mm-hmm. act normal and not run around in the middle of the night killing people.
Yeah, and in real life, there's no way to tell a serial killer by their appearance. So, what are real-life serial killers like, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a real-life serial killer can be distinguished through diligent patterns and behavior. Serial killers or psychopaths are diagnosed by their purposeless and irrational antisocial behavior, lack of conscience and emotions.
Yeah.
So it's more like inside.
It's a mental illness.
It's a mental illness. Like you can't. What if you're a serial killer or I'm a serial killer and just don't know. So the majority of these people that like to kill, they are thrill seekers and fearless. Similarly, for all serial killers, murder is either a natural or passion-filled choice that they make.
Yeah. So it's not like a heat of the moment thing where you kill someone because of they cheated on you or they killed someone you love, something like that. It's like planned and meticulous,
yes.
And they know what they're doing.
Exactly. So today we're going to talk about two serial killers that were born in different centuries, but both caused chaos and panic with their killings in their community at their respective time.
Mm-hmm.
So we are talking about Elizabeth Bathory, aka the Blood Countess, described as the most vicious female serial killer in all recorded history.
Yes.
Yes, and Richard Chase, the Vampire of Sacramento.
So we're going to go into some real-life vampires.
Yeah, real-life vampires. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this American serial killer, cannibal, and necrophile who killed 6 people in the span of a month in 1977 and 1978 in Sacramento, California. He was nicknamed the Vampire of Sacramento because he drank his victims' blood and cannibalized their remains.
Nice.
Yeah. So
not nice.
No, not nice.
Not nice.
So if we've caught your attention, listener, then sit back, relax, and keep listening to the Disconnected Podcast with Angel and Jesse. Let's begin.
So let's begin with Countess Elizabeth Bathory. She was a wealthy and powerful Hungarian noblewoman in the 17th century. 17th century.
Okay.
So in 1610, she was accused of gruesome acts of serial murder and confined to her home of Castle Kachtik, something like that.
Kachtik.
These are all in like Slovenian. They're all in a language that I do not know how to speak.
Yeah.
That's where she remained until her death.
Okay.
So Bathory is reputed to have killed at least 600 victims.
Oh, wow.
The official number is around 650. Ow, I just punched the table because I was so... That's such a big number.
That's a big number. 650.
Yes, 650.
Wow.
Earning her a Guinness World Record score the most prolific female murderer.
Congratulations, Bathory.
Congratulations.
For her being a sucky person.
For being just a terrible person. Her actions resulted in a nickname of the Blood Countess, or the Blood Countess, sorry, or the Countess Dracula is another name that they gave her.
Mm-hmm.
And may have been a source of inspiration for Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh,
yeah, so nice. She may have been the one who inspired him to write the actual Dracula. So wow. She was not nicknamed that because during her time, because it didn't exist.
Right.
Until okay. After.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's possible Bathory was not guilty at all of all of these crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that it was just like she was a victim of conspiracy theories.
Oh.
Created by the people or by political people.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So born in Nyírbátor, Hungary on August 7th, 1560, Bathory was born into a prominent Protestant nobility in Hungary. Her family controlled Transylvania, and her uncle, Stephen Bathory, was the king of Poland.
Okay.
Yeah. She was raised in a castle in Exed, Hungary, and her parents were barons. So it's like the position of king, and right below that is barons and lords.
Right.
So yeah. She was loaded, and yeah. She had a lot of political power, or her family, because
mm-hmm.
her uncle was the king.
Yeah.
There are claims that Bathory was exposed to brutal punishments executed by the family's officials, or like the family's officers, and Satanist teaching by her family members.
Ooh.
So these are rumors that she was exposed to like a lot of really messed up.
Like witchcraft.
Stuff. Yeah, like witchcraft, Satanism. Torture from a young age. So that's like, they think that that's what kind of messed her up.
All the good stuff.
Yeah, all the good stuff. Being born into such a privileged family, she was taught how to speak Latin, German, Hungarian, and Greek. So I really want to emphasize that she was not just an average person. She was not an average like serial killer who was born into poverty and then like witnesses some things and then starts killing people.
No, she was well educated.
She was well educated. She was very rich. She was probably given like the best tutors in the world because they just could do that with the money that they had.
Yeah.
And she was like just a really important person that ended up doing terrible things or was allegedly doing terrible things.
Right.
And at 13, she was said to have given birth to a child born out of wedlock from a peasant boy. So the child was then given to a woman they trusted, in quotations.
Okay.
A woman the Bathory family trusted. And the child was taken to Romania. But this is also just a rumor. They're not really sure if it actually happened or what was going on there. But they think that she did have a child and it was given away. And I guess that is also placed into the part where she was just not living the happiest life, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
The rumor probably grew since she was engaged to a powerful count around the same age. So she was engaged already by the age of 13.
Wow.
Yeah. And by the age of 15, she was married off to that count. Count Ferenc Nadasdy, a member of another powerful Hungarian family, and subsequently moved to Castle Kacstike.
Okay.
Where she lived the rest of her life.
Okay.
And it was a wedding gift from her spouse's family. So imagine just getting a gift from your, like, you get married to someone and their family just gives you a castle.
That would be nice.
That's the goal.
Yeah. I don't know what to give you. I'll give you a castle.
Yes. Here's my wedding gift. A castle.
A castle.
Yeah. They're just, you can see how rich.
Rich people.
Just rich people stuff. You know, you wouldn't understand.
I know, yeah.
By 1578, Nadasdy became the chief commander of Hungarian troops, leading them to war against the Ottomans. With her husband away at war, Bathory managed business and affairs in the estates. So she was like in charge of everything that was happening in the house.
Mm-hmm.
The role usually included responsibility for the Hungarian and Slavic people, providing medical care during the Long War, which is the war that her husband was fighting in.
Mm-hmm.
There were several instances where Bathory intervened on behalf of destitute women, including a woman whose husband was captured by the Ottomans and a woman whose daughter was raped and impregnated.
Oh.
So she was known to help people during the war.
So she was a good person. Maybe people wanted to just give her a bad reputation.
And that's the theory, though. And we'll get into some of those theories of maybe she was just set up.
Mm-hmm.
Bathory and Adasti had 4 children during their marriage. Anna, Orsica, Andras, and Pal, or translated into Paul.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Pal. So Adasti died on January 4th, 1604, at the age of 48, her husband. Wow. Very young.
Yeah, but there
also
were a lot of diseases.
We're talking about
then.
The 17th century.
Yeah, there were no vaccines, no nothing.
Yeah. Although the exact nature of the illness which led to his death is unknown, it seems to have started in 1601 and caused a debilitating pain in his legs. And by 1603, he was completely disabled. He couldn't move.
Okay.
So it was like a deteriorating kind of illness. Bathory and Adasti's marriage lasted for 29 years. Mm. And it probably would have kept going if
he would have.
He wouldn't have died. Yeah. Which is just like, maybe she could have avoided a lot of these things if he was still alive. Maybe she wouldn't have been set up, or maybe she wouldn't have ended up doing a lot of these things that she probably did do.
Maybe when he died, she just lost it.
Mm-hmm. Before dying, Adasti entrusted his heirs and widow to Giorgi? I think that's how you say it, Giorgi. Yeah. Thurzo, who ironically would eventually lead to the investigation into Bathory's crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Between 1602 and 1604, after rumors of Bathory's atrocities had spread throughout the kingdom, Lutheran minister István Magyari, these names are just out there.
Yeah, those are cool names.
Yeah. Made complaints against her, both publicly and at the court of Vienna. In 1610, King Matthias, whatever, the second, assigned Thurzo, the Palatine of Hungary, to investigate. By October 1610, they had collected 52 witness statements. By 1611, that number had risen over 300.
Wow.
300 witnesses against Elizabeth Bathory.
About her killings. Or suspicions.
Yeah. Or about witnessing
something that
she did, or finding bodies, or having relatives that were at her castle and then didn't come back.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I want to hear more.
So I'm going to go through some very specific things that she did to her victims, or people reported that she did to her victims. So listener discretion is going to get a little weird.
Yes.
So according...
It's going to get crazy.
Okay, no. Stop. So according to testimonies, Bathory's first victims were girls aged 10 to 14 years.
Oh.
Yeah, so she was not killing, like, adults.
Adults.
She only killed women and...
Children.
And girls. Little girls.
Little girl.
Yeah, which is just...
Messed up.
Messed up, super messed up. Killing daughters of lesser gentry who were sent to her castle, to her place,
mm-hmm.
To learn courtly etiquette. They were girls. It was a normal thing, mm-hmm. back then, a tradition to send girls somewhere else to learn like proper etiquette,
like
of
manners,
like, manners, how to sit like a lady, how to eat like a lady.
So Elizabeth Bathory was the teacher. She was teaching them.
She had a place where they taught.
Oh, okay. In the castle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There were many suspected forms of torture carried out by Bathory. According to the Budapest City Archives, the girls were burned with hot tongs and then placed into freezing cold water.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So whenever you burn yourself, don't run wherever you burned yourself under cold water, because it will hurt more and it'll scar,
mm-hmm.
really badly.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's what she did. She would burn them and then she would dump cold water, freezing cold water on them.
Why?
Yeah. Shit. Some of Bathory's victims were covered with honey and left outside for insects to devour. During colder parts of the year, young women might be stripped naked and forced into deadly ice baths. Bathory sometimes tortured girls by driving needles into their fingers. So under their fingernails.
Oh, shit.
She would drive needles into
that.
Yeah, cutting their noses or lips, or whipping them with stinging nettles.
Yeah, that's like a very painful torture.
Yeah, she wouldn't just capture someone and kill them. She would torture them.
No, yeah, like putting nails, the what is it? What was it?
The needles in under your nose.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. She would bite shoulders and breasts, as well as burning the flesh, including the genitals, of some victims. So not just bite, she would like take off chunks off their bodies.
What the
by
hell?
Biting. That's why she was
why
she named she like the blood countess.
She sounded so normal.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's why I wanted to emphasize that.
Yeah, like what happened to her? Like
I don't know.
The death of her husband, maybe just like she tripped out or
that's why there's some rumors that she was like witness to torture when she was younger and Satanist teachings.
Or maybe yeah, maybe she since she was doing the Satanist things, the all that crazy shit, maybe she was just being possessed or maybe some spirits were like telling her to do
or
stuff.
Or she was just
freaking
up.
Crazy.
She was just a crazy person.
Yeah.
The intimate nature of Bathory's attacks suggests a sexual motivation, though it's impossible to know with certainty what compelled her to act.
Mm-hmm.
Witnesses also claimed that Bathory's favorite method of torture was using scissors to mutilate her victims' bodies and faces. She supposedly used the instrument to cut off their hands, noses, and genitals. She sometimes even used scissors to slice open the skin between her victims' fingers.
Oh, shit.
So, the little, like, flaps that you have between your fingers?
Yeah.
She would use scissors to cut that.
Just cut them.
Just cut that. Cut down that.
Like chickens.
Cut down their hands.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, that was her favorite form
That was her favorite form of
torture.
Torture
was using scissors to just... Imagine scissors. Like, what kinds of scissors... Like, just imagine those, like, big garden ones that are just...
Yeah. Yeah, back then, maybe it was like the steel scissors.
Or maybe like a medical type of scissors.
Yeah, like very sharp.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's yeah.
Crazy.
So that's the extent of her torture, which is not great.
No.
It's absolutely terrible. Some witnesses named relatives who died while at this place that Bathory had. Others reported having seen traces of torture on dead bodies, some of which were buried in graveyards and others in unmarked locations. So they found bodies around.
Around the castle?
Maybe not around the castle, but they found bodies.
Okay.
And they were like, this body was tortured, but they found multiple bodies, which was strange.
Right.
They didn't just find one body that was tortured and like, okay, I guess they had a bad...
Just a bad day.
Just a bad fate. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was multiple bodies that were found. Two court officials, Benedict Desio and Jacob Silvassi, claimed to have personally witnessed the Countess' torture and kill young servant girls. On December 30th, 1610, Thurzo went to her castle and arrested Bathory along with her four servants. So she didn't do these crimes on her own. She had help.
Mm-hmm.
She had four servants who were accused of being her accomplices. Dorotia Semtes, Ilona Joe, Katerina Benica, and Janos Ujvari.
Man, those names.
I don't know if I'm saying them right. I'm just reading them as they are on my notes. There are many claims in how Thurzo found Bathory when she was arrested. Some say she was in the middle of torturing someone, while others say she was just having dinner.
Maybe when eating her.
Maybe eating someone.
Her victims.
The most plausible claim that has been found was that she was covered in blood during her arrest. So this is the most, like, popular claim out there. Many believe that Bathory would bathe in her victim's blood to retain their beauty or youth.
Oh, my God.
So a Satanist type of
ritual.
Though sadistic pleasure seems to be a more possible explanation as to why Bathory would have this type of behavior. So it's like, I kill you, now I get the pleasure of bathing in your body. Or in your body's blood.
Yeah, so I don't age.
Yeah, so I don't age.
So I stay beautiful forever and ever.
Yeah.
Wow.
But these claims were made years after her death.
Yeah.
And which is why she got the name Countess Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not really sure if they're true, but that's some of these popular claims that she would bathe in people's blood.
Who would make up these stories?
Well, you know how stories get twisted over time.
Yeah.
It's a normal thing to happen. It's human nature to twist stories, but... It's still crazy.
Yeah, if it's true, she was freaking...
Nuts.
She was nuts.
Yeah. Bathory was kept under strict house arrest. So this was her punishment. After killing over 650 women, she was put under house arrest.
Okay.
But it makes sense because she was a powerful Hungarian noble woman.
She had influences. Yeah. Yeah.
The servants were not as lucky, though. Ilona Joe and Dorothea Sentis had their fingers torn out with a pair of red-hot pincers and were then burned alive.
That was... Okay, so...
Those were the servants. So those the two of them were... their fingers were torn out with a pair of red-hot pincers, and then they were burned alive.
Okay. But Bathory was just on...
On house arrest. The other one, Janos Ujvari, because he was young, they thought, maybe let's give him a less painful method of execution, so they just beheaded them.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I like
let's
how...
Just, let's just cut his head. He's young.
Yeah. You know what? We're not going to torture him.
No.
We're just going to cut his head off.
Yeah. You're welcome.
You're welcome.
What the hell?
Yeah. Katerina Benica received a life sentence after evidence showed that she had been abused by the other women. So okay. Maybe she was forced
to doing this.
To doing these things.
Atrocities.
Yeah, atrocities. So she was just placed in a life sentence.
Okay. She was sent to prison.
Yeah, she was sent to prison for life.
Okay.
The accusations of murder were based on rumors. There is no document to prove that anyone in the area complained about the Countess, though. So this is when we start getting into theories that possibly she was set up.
Okay. Yeah, but because think about it. People were, they might have been, I don't know, like, they might envy her. They
yeah.
might have envied her.
Political motivations.
Political motivations. They just wanted her ruined.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
See her just fall.
Exactly. So in this time period, if someone was harmed, or even if someone stole, like, something random, like a chicken or a pig or something, a letter of complaint was written.
Mm-hmm.
So people would just complain, and they were like, okay, let's go arrest this person because there's a complaint about them. But what Elizabeth had is that she had multiple complaints.
Okay.
Just hundreds of them. Who knows if they were paid off? Who knows if they were real? Author Laszlo Nagy argued that the proceedings against Bathory were largely politically motivated, possibly due to her extensive wealth and ownership of large areas of land in Hungary, escalating after the death of her husband.
Mm-hmm.
So after her husband died, they were like, oh, she is not protected anymore. Okay. We can mess with her. And they did.
And they did.
And they did. King Matthias owed a large debt to Bathory, which was canceled after she was arrested.
Oh.
Yeah. So the king owed her a lot of money. But after she was arrested, well, you don't get money anymore. So the king didn't have to pay her back.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yes.
Dr. Irma Savetsky-Cardos argues the physical evidence was exaggerated, and Thurzo, the man who investigated her, misrepresented dead and wounded patients as victims of Bathory, as disgracing her would greatly benefit his political state ambitions. So she thinks that it was just... exaggerations. In 2018, article of the Presglad Nauk. Okay, I'm going to say it in Spanish. The Historical Science Review. Alexandra Bartosiewicz.
In Spanish?
Mm.
You say
in Spanish?
I'm going to say in Spanish.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I'm trying to read these names that are just really not like... my...
Where's the Spanish part?
I'm sorry. I'm just going to say it in English. The Historical Science Review article by Alexandra, I'm sorry, I can't say your last name, stated when Bathory was persecuted, the accusations were a spectacle to destroy her family's influence in the region, which was considered a threat to the political interests of her neighbors, including the Habsburg Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all just claims that it was just politics. She was a victim of political threats and conspiracy theories because people wanted to benefit from it.
Right, okay.
The highest number of victims cited during the trial of Bathory's accomplices was 650, but the number comes from a claim by a servant girl named Susanna that Jacob Silvasi, Bathory's court official, had seen the figure in one of Bathory's private books. So this servant girl claimed that Bathory wrote down the number.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's where 650 comes from.
Okay.
That Bathory wrote it down, supposedly.
Right.
the book was never revealed, and Silvassi never mentioned it in his testimony.
Yeah.
So it's a...
Imagine what that book had it all, like, had inside.
Yeah.
Like, all, maybe, like...
If it ever existed.
If it ever existed,
imagine what she wrote down.
Yeah, about her each victim that she killed.
Yeah.
Well, maybe someone found it, but maybe they just don't want to make it public.
Exactly. Who knows? Who knows if this was, if this even happened or not? But it's really messed up. If it did.
It is.
On the evening of August 20th, 1614, Bathory complained to her bodyguard that her hands were cold, whereupon he replied, "It's nothing, mistress. Just go down. Just, like, go to sleep."
Okay.
She went to sleep and was found dead the following morning.
What happened to her?
She was just old and sick.
She was old and sick?
She was just old and sick. Location where she was buried is unknown, but many believe she was buried
hell.
She's in hell.
Yeah. She was buried in hell.
Or she's probably buried within the church area of the castle in an unmarked grave.
A.K.A. hell.
A.K.A. hell.
Yeah, because I don't think those kinds of people go to heaven.
No.
They go to heaven.
If Bathory did any things. Of these killings and all of these claims were true against her, then... she is probably one of the most terrible people to have existed in the world.
Yeah.
There's some terrible people out there. She is one of them. But yeah, she was arrested. She was placed under house arrest. Her servants were executed or sent to prison. And many people do believe that she did do these things, and other people say she was set up for political gain. Who knows?
Who knows?
I think it did happen. I think she did these things.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just...
There's too many witnesses out there.
Yeah.
Who... And there were bodies found.
How do you explain
bodies
that?
Bodies that were tortured.
How do you explain that?
I don't know. It must have been... You must have been really... Or either the king was super twisted or Bathory was super twisted.
Yeah.
One of those.
Because you just don't find... You just don't find corpses... Like,
no.
Lying there.
Tortured.
Tortured. Like, come on.
No. So, yeah. Something really messed up happened. Who knows who did it, but it happened.
It did. Yeah. It was... That was good.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Yeah.
She was crazy.
She was crazy.
She was freaking crazy.
Someone was crazy.
I know.
It was probably her. But yeah. Someone was crazy.
So, we're going to jump now to Richard Trenton Chase, a.k.a. the Vampire of Sacramento.
Ooh.
Yeah. He was born on May 23, 1950 in Santa Clara County, California.
Oh, California.
Yes. You know.
Some of them are...
Some, like the majority of the serial killers that...
Why are they in California?
Yeah, like Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy.
Please don't.
Like Ted Bundy.
California. And the Golden State Killer.
Yeah, Charles Manson.
Richard Ramirez.
Richard, well, you know?
Yeah. The only reason why I know them is because they were in our state.
Yeah, so. Richard Chase showed signs of mental illness at a very young age, but his father, a strict and sometimes physically abusive parent, did little to get him help. Richard's parents were strict disciplinarians who doled out punishment regularly. When Richard was only 2 years old, he was force-fed by his father until he vomited.
Oh.
So we start to see that Richard Chase was tormented.
Yeah, he was abused by his dad.
Yeah.
Since
the age of two, so... You know,
yeah, a lot of the traumas. Serial killers have this...
Traumas are starting to...
Terrible beginning, yeah.
You know, so when... So Pamela, Richard's little sister, would later recall confrontations between her brother and their father that ended with Richard Sr. shaking the boy or throwing him against the wall.
No.
Yeah, the elder Richard was allegedly also emotionally abusive and yelled at his son whenever the boy... messed something up.
Oh, okay.
So Richard Sr. was a dick.
Yes.
He was an a-hole.
Yeah, he really was terrible.
Yeah, I would never treat my son like that. Like,
no, you would never treat another human being like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so You know, as we already know, it is very common that in each serial killer, there is a dark history full of abuse, violence, and traumas that they experience as children, mm-hmm. right? And the case of Richard Chase was no exception.
Yeah.
Due to the elder Richard's difficulty managing money and alcoholism, the parents also had marital problems and often fought, usually loudly in front of their children. Beatrice Chase, the mom, on the other hand, had the tendency to accuse her husband of using dope and trying to poison her.
Okay.
So as the years went on, she also began accusing Richard Sr. of infidelity with their neighbors.
Okay, so it was just, they
had problems.
It was not a healthy place to be in.
No.
For anyone.
For anyone, yeah, because they were just, it was a problem after problem. And
yeah.
They spent their lives fighting each other, and their children were like...
They saw everything.
They saw everything.
Which is just the worst.
Yeah. So she even claimed that he was cheating while the family went on a camping trip in Oregon.
Okay.
Preoccupied with their crumbling marriage, Richard's parents paid little attention to their quiet son and the strange behaviors he began to exhibit. When he was 10 years old, Richard developed a grim interest in dead animals.
Oh, yeah, that's usually where it starts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
I know. He liked to kill and torture cats that he found around the neighborhood.
That's so sad.
He was fascinated by their blood and insides in a way that seemed almost clinical.
Yeah.
So it started with cats, but Richard would later begin killing birds, rabbits, and dogs.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, the young boy had killed so many stray cats that neighbors took notice of their sudden disappearances. Like, imagine, dude. How many cats do you have to kill?
For people to notice.
For people to start noticing, like, hey, we had like 100 cats around, roaming around. Where are they?
Yeah, and usually when you have like a stray cat in the neighborhood, like people feed them. People are like, oh, let's leave food out for the kitty. And then you start noticing the cat's not coming around to eat. You're like, where are these cats going?
Like, when you start to notice that, that means something's terribly wrong.
Hundreds.
Yeah.
Maybe not hundreds, but a lot.
Yeah.
But how much do you have to neglect your son to not notice how many animals he's
killing? If something was wrong with my son, I would
immediately notice.
Like if he's too quiet or if he's just talking to himself or...
Or if he's out in the backyard killing a cat.
Killing birds, killing a rabbit. Like, hey, what the hell? Are you fucking crazy or what?
Dude, let's take you to somewhere to help you because this is not normal.
No. So among her flowers, the mom, Beatrice, she found one cat buried in the soil.
Okay, so she did find something.
Yeah. So Richard also developed the strange habit of burning pans while trying to cook for himself in the middle of the night. He tended to leave puddles on the kitchen floor and made messes that he made no effort to clean up. At other times, he would turn the heat up in the house to over 90 degrees whenever he was alone. Strip off his clothing, and spend the night lying on the couch in the living room.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he liked to play with matches and would often set small fires. And he would also still wet the bed. So there's this thing called McDonald Triad, also known as the Triad of Sociopathy. It's a set of behaviors thought to be predicted of violent behavior when observed in childhood.
Okay.
So the three behaviors are animal cruelty, frequent bedwetting past the age of 5, and arson. Richard exhibited all three.
Yeah. Yeah. So someone just needed to help this kid.
He needed help.
And no one was there.
No one.
Unfortunately. You
know? Yeah. So by the time Richard was in high school, his parents had had enough of each other. They separated, and Beatrice took her children to Los Angeles to live with relatives when Richard was in the middle of 9th grade. Only 8 days later, Richard Sr. followed, intent on bringing his son back to Sacramento.
Okay.
4 months later, Beatrice and Pamela came back home. Back at school, Richard, known as Rick to his classmates, seemed to have no trouble fitting in. He kept himself well-groomed, and he was decently popular, even going on a few dates with girls.
Oh.
So he seemed very normal.
Yeah, he wasn't like the weird...
No.
Like, he wasn't like an outsider.
No, he was popular. He was very social.
He knew how to blend in.
Yeah, he knew how to blend in, exactly. So there were two girls in particular whom he dated seriously. And one relationship he had with a girl named Libby Christopher lasted for an entire year.
Okay.
However, both of these relationships would come to an end for the same embarrassing reason. He was attracted to women, but when it came down to actually having sex, he could not express his attraction. The girls he dated broke up with him once they realized he could not maintain an erection.
That's like a thing for serial killers, though, because they're unable to actually feel normal human emotion. That they're just... They just can't.
Right. So because of this, Richard...
they broke up with him.
He felt humiliated.
Yeah.
So chronically underweight and impotent, he began to feel weak and broken.
Uh-oh.
Like, his manhood was just like...
Yeah, he's like, I'm not a real man.
Yeah. So his defective penis became a point of obsession for him throughout his life and perhaps sparked one of his earliest and most constant delusions.
Mm-hmm.
In Richard's mind, his ED, erectile dysfunction.
Oh, I thought you meant something else.
No. In Richard's mind, his erectile dysfunction was the cause of a lack of blood. To fix this, he needed to consume the blood of animals.
Oh my God. What?
That's what he thought.
Yeah.
Like, I need more blood.
Yeah.
What am I going to do?
You know, get blood from somewhere else.
I need to
else.
Consume the blood of other little animals.
Okay, don't.
maybe that's how we said it.
Maybe, but that's super creepy.
Yeah. Still popular enough to be invited to parties, Richard began to drink quite often. At one party, he ended up drinking too much and behaved erratically, running down the street, screaming and making noises that no one could understand.
Oh.
One of his friends became concerned and took him home. Alone together, Richard finally confided in the other boy about his impotence.
Yeah.
It was taking a toll on him, affecting him deeper than he let on. He began to experiment with marijuana. He also took large amounts of LSD and amphetamines.
Okay.
So Chase's problems grew worse when his father allegedly kicked him out of the house because his father was like, I'm not going to deal with you. You're a drug addict. I don't need this right now.
And his dad was already a terrible person.
Yeah. So he didn't care.
Yeah.
So without supervision, Chase turned to alcohol and drugs, which quickly turned into substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Richard developed hypochondria as he matured. He often complained that his heart would occasionally stop beating or that someone had stolen his pulmonary artery.
What?
Very unstable.
Yeah, exactly.
At times, he thought he was a walking corpse.
Okay.
Yeah, but being occasionally dead was no reason to neglect his health. Fearing that he lacked vitamin C, he reportedly pressed whole oranges to the skin of his forehead, believing that his brain would absorb the nutrients directly.
So this is just someone who is completely... messed up.
Yeah, they're messed up.
There's no just, normal behavior here.
No, just imagine his manhood is just on the floor.
He had a terrible childhood.
He feels inferior to everybody.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the support of his parents to help him.
He fell into substance abuse. Like, that is just a terrible recipe for disaster.
So he was alone in the world.
Yeah.
It was just him. And
just him. It was just him.
Yeah. So one of his strangest and most powerful delusions involved his skull.
Okay.
He felt that his cranial bones had split apart and begun to shift beneath his skin. That's what he thought.
Okay.
Changing places and jumbling like puzzle pieces. He shaved his head in an effort to monitor their movements. So he was...
Is he psychotic?
Yes. Unsurprisingly, at the age of 25, Chase was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia and institutionalized in 1975 to prevent him from becoming a danger to himself.
Okay.
His fascination with blood earned him the nickname Dracula among the psychiatric hospital's assistants, who witnessed him kill an attempt to drink the blood of several birds in an effort to prevent the effects of a poison that was, he imagined, slowly turning his own blood to powder.
Okay.
It was his attempt to inject himself with rabbit's blood, which made him very, very sick, that had resulted in his institutionalization. In spite of several similar incidents, the staff believed that he had rehabilitated Chase and he was released to live with his mother. It was a fatal decision, as Chase's condition wasn't improving. He was growing worse. Though Richard Chase had been released into his mother's care, there was nothing legally binding that forced him to stay with her. Not long after his release from the psychiatric hospital, he moved out, later saying he thought his mother was poisoning him. He moved into an apartment he shared with a group of young men he called friends, but it seems they didn't know Chase well. And when he persisted in unusual behavior, notably drug abuse like LSD, marijuana, and alcohol that left them constantly high and a habit for walking around the apartment without any clothing, they asked him to leave. Richard Chase, however, refused, and it seemed the path of least resistance to his sometime roommates to abandon the apartment and find somewhere else to live. So they asked him to leave, and he refused, and they're like, okay, you know what? Just stay there. We're gonna leave.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we don't want...
We don't want any trouble.
We don't want any trouble. Let's
just go.
Yeah, because he's creepy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So Chase was once again living on his own, a circumstance that almost always aggravated the symptoms of his condition.
Okay.
During one visit, his mother saw Chase tear open a dead cat and smother himself in its blood, like Elizabeth Bathory.
Yeah, exactly.
So that, odd. When you said that, I was like, oh shit, it's like,
yeah,
like Richard Chase.
It's like almost as if they were probably mentally ill and probably needed to be put somewhere where they could get the help they wanted. But, you know, who? And maybe that's just me. Maybe yeah. I'm just making up.
No, something. You're right. You're right. You're right. She never reported the incident, the mother. His fascination with blood resurfaced, and he began capturing and killing small animals. He would eat them raw or blend their organs with soda and drink the mixture.
Interesting. That's not interesting. I'm just saying that because I don't know how to react.
That is very interesting.
Christ.
He believed his heart was shrinking, which led him to commit these disgusting acts.
Yeah.
He was also seen by his neighbors taking many local pets into his apartment, which were never seen again.
Oh, he would just steal people's pets?
Yeah.
Okay.
In August of 1977, Nevada police found him late one night in the Lake Tahoe area, covered in blood and carrying a bucket with a liver in the back of his pickup truck.
Where did that come from?
Since they determined the blood and organ belonged to a cow.
Oh.
Not a human.
Okay, not yet, at
least. They let him go. They're like, okay, it's just the cow liver, guys.
Don't worry about it.
And he's filled with blood, but it's a cow liver.
Don't worry.
It's not a human liver.
We're not going to question this.
No, it's not weird.
It's not weird at all.
Not suspicious.
We've seen multiple people come around and kill a cow and then take a liver and put it in a bucket and cover themselves in blood. That's completely normal.
That is not suspicious at all.
No.
You can go, Chase.
You can go.
Have a nice night.
Yeah.
You know?
The what?
I don't know.
Crazy.
So Richard Chase slipped through the cracks in systems that could have helped him and protected others.
Yeah.
So that was like his one chance to get help.
That was like the last thing. The last barrier before he went completely...
Nuts. So as it was, alone, with no one to watch him, he fell more deeply under the power of his delusions.
Mm-hmm.
Chase's killings were attempts at self-preservation, or so he believed. He had delusions of persecution by alien forces and insisted that he only ingested human flesh and blood to protect himself from outside forces.
Okay.
That were trying to steal his blood.
This guy is crazy.
He's fucking nuts.
Okay, I don't...
He's just...
I don't want to be rude and be like, okay... people who are mentally ill are crazy. I'm not saying that. I'm saying this particular person could have gotten help, yes, and then he didn't. And so he went just off the charts. Mm-hmm. Off the charts insane. Yeah. He went insane. This is like actual insanity.
This is a clear example of when a person just
goes insane.
Goes insane.
Like the actual meaning of insane. This is it.
Yeah. On December 29, 1977, Richard Chase was frustrated and lonely. His mother hadn't allowed him to come for Christmas, he would later recall, and he was really, really upset.
Mm-hmm.
On the 29th of December, 1977, Ambrose Griffin was shot by Richard Chase in a random drive-by shooting outside his home after a shopping trip. The 51-year-old was an engineer and had been helping his wife with bags from the car when he saw him fall to the ground. 2 days earlier, a woman reported a man had shot at her home. Okay. She lived a couple of blocks from Ambrose Griffin and his family, and a search of her home found a .22 caliber casing, the same gun used to kill Ambrose.
Okay.
Despite eyewitnesses coming forward with a description of the killer fleeing the area, leads dried up quickly and Ambrose Griffin's murder lay unsolved. On the 23rd of January 1978, pregnant Teresa was taking out the rubbish when Chase entered her home through the unlocked front door. He shot Teresa 3 times and then stabbed her with a butcher knife. When she was dead, he raped her and mutilated her body, cutting off her nipples and removing her internal organs.
Mm.
He drank her blood and smeared the remainder on the walls.
Okay, well, I don't know how to react to that. That's just...
Yeah, and Chase believed that an unlocked door was an invitation to enter someone's property.
No, that's just creepy. That's just... I got chills. I got like full-body chills when you said that.
And a few days later, the Edwards family returned to their home to find Chase in their house. He had entered through an unlocked door and defecated in their infant's bed. Robert Edwards pursued the intruder, but Chase escaped by jumping over a fence.
Mm-hmm.
4 days later, on the 27th of January, Chase was checking homes for unlocked doors when he found 38-year-old Evelyn Merrill's door unlocked. Chase killed 51-year-old Dan Meredith in the hallway with a single gunshot to the head. Evelyn was killed by another gunshot to her head and was found naked on her bed, raped after death. Her abdomen had been open and her intestines protruded from the wound. There was also evidence that her blood had been removed. 6-year-old Jason was found in his mother's bedroom. He had been shot twice in the head, but his body was still intact.
Oh.
However, a 22-month-old David was missing from the house. His mutilated body was found a few months later behind a church near Chase's apartment. In haste, Chase had left bloody footprints all over the house. He also took Dan Meredith's car, which was found a few blocks from the murder scene with the engine still running. However, investigators were yet to realize that the vehicle had been abandoned a few hundred yards from Chase's apartment.
Oh, so he was committing crime like right... like a few blocks away from where he lived.
Yeah, he didn't care. He was just killing to kill.
Yeah. Like, this is someone who just doesn't...
This was someone who didn't plan this, you know?
It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go this far away from my apartment and kill this person.
He just felt the need to do it.
Like you said, he would just walk around and check which door was unlocked.
Yeah, and...
and that was his choice.
Yeah, he thought if... the door is unlocked, then
it's like, oh, an invitation for me to come in.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, I'm gonna lock my doors.
I always lock my doors.
Yeah, me too, but I'm gonna lock them extra.
Even my, like, my bedroom door, I always lock it.
I lock doors well.
Yeah, so, I don't know. The FBI was brought in due to the severity of the case, and agents Robert Ressler and Ross Varpagel began to develop a profile of the offender.
Mm-hmm.
It was a white male, aged 25 to 27, thin, undernourished appearance, single, living alone in a location within 1 mile of abandoned station wagon owned by one of the victims. Residents will be extremely slovenly and unkempt,
and evidence of the crimes will be found at the residence. Suspect will have a history of mental illness and use of drugs. So this is what they're saying.
So they profiled him like almost
really good.
Perfectly.
Yeah. They also said suspect will be an unemployed loner who does not associate with either males or females and will probably spend a great deal of time in his own residence. If he resides with anyone, it would be with his parents. However, this is unlikely. Suspect will have no prior military history, will be a high school or college dropout, probably suffers from one or more forms of paranoid psychosis. So they said this is like the description they gave.
Who they think it is, and they described him perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and many people in the surrounding areas were questioned, and despite having seen a white male driving a red station wagon, no one could give an accurate description of this elusive killer, except one
person.
Yeah. The same day Robert Edwards ran Richard Chase out of his home, Nancy Holder was shopping in the Town and Country Village Shopping Center in Sacramento. She was in a store when Richard Chase approached her. "Were you on the motorcycle when Kurt was killed?" he asked. Nancy and Chase had gone to school together, and 10 years earlier, Nancy had dated a boy named Kurt, who'd been killed while on his motorcycle. She knew Chase had been heavily into drugs, and she didn't immediately recognize him. He was a shadow of the boy he'd been at school. Something about Chase made her uncomfortable, and while he paid for something in the store, she walked out and drove off in her car. Nancy realized that Chase had been wearing the same orange parka jacket mentioned in the description of the uncaptured killer and contacted the police.
Oh.
Yeah.
Snap.
Mm-hmm. Investigators ran a background check on Chase and found a .22 caliber gun registered in his name and set to work setting up team to bring him in.
Yeah.
So on the 27th of January 1978, the police went to Chase's apartment to question him, but he refused to open the door.
Yeah.
Instead, the police hid down the hallway, and when Chase emerged, they apprehended him. He was wearing the orange parka, carrying a box, and had Dan Meredith's wallet on him. Everything was bloodstained.
Oh my god, so he had like the victim's belongings in his house.
So inside the apartment, the walls and floor were also covered in blood.
Yeah.
When they looked further, they found David Ferreira's brain in a container and his body parts in plastic wrap.
So not only did he have belongings, but he had like...
Organs. Yeah.
Bro.
So in addition, there were parts of Evelyn Miroth and Teresa Wallen in his refrigerator. And there were several pet collars discarded on the counter.
Imagine the smell in the house.
Very like decay, like
just
very,
like a decay very smell. Like the smell of like dried blood. That's disgusting.
Yeah. On May 8th, 1979, a jury found Chase guilty of all six counts of murder in the first degree. The defense argued that he was suffering from mental illness and his attacks weren't premeditated. Shut up. Like, what the hell? He was crazy.
Okay. He was insane.
Yeah.
But he was also mentally ill. There's a difference. There are people who are mentally ill that are half schizophrenia that don't end up doing these things, no matter how bad their schizophrenia gets.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have that impulse control to not do those things. However, this man was mentally ill, but also he was insane enough.
Yeah.
And a bad, terrible person to do these things.
He was.
He was a terrible person. That is a terrible person. No matter how sick you are, you do not kill other human beings.
Yeah, and it took the jury an hour to find Chase legally sane and another 4 hours to decide that he should be put to death by the gas chamber.
Oh, damn. So they gave him the death penalty?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, snap.
So he was transferred to San Quentin State Prison,
yeah,
where other inmates fear him due to his violent offenses, and they often encourage him to kill himself.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would be scared too.
Of course.
I would be so scared.
This freaking crazy.
Insane,
murderer.
Yeah.
Serial killer.
Exactly.
During his time in prison, Chase agreed to meet with FBI agent Robert Ressler, and within the series of interviews that took place, they spoke of Nazis and aliens.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, they discussed his theories on his need to drink blood and how he selected his victims. If the door was locked, that means you're not welcome. That's what he said.
Yeah.
So on the 26th of December, 1980, Richard was found dead in his cell. He was 30 years old. He had been saving his antidepressants over many weeks and took them all in one sitting.
So he committed suicide.
Yes. So this was a very weird case. I don't want to say I don't blame him. It's just he had a very hard or
terrible childhood.
Young adult life. He should have received the help.
Yes.
But no one did. He was alone.
Yeah. I understand why he developed certain mental problems, but at the same time, there is no excuse to take another person's life.
There's no excuse. Mm-mm. Exactly. So, we hope you guys enjoyed this new episode. And if you did, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And yeah, please share this episode with others who may be interested in this topic. To catch all the latest from the Disconnected Podcast, you can follow us on Instagram as The Disconnected Pod and on Facebook as The Disconnected Podcast with Angel and Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
Also, feel free to let us know what topics you'd like to see covered in future episodes. Get in touch in the comments or on the Disconnected Podcast social media networks.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that will be all for today.
Yes.
Anything to add, Jesse?
Lock your doors and don't go to castles. Because the world, oh man, people are messed up.
Yeah.
Some people are just so messed up.
So just let's start with locking doors.
Yeah, lock your doors. Don't leave your front door. Yeah. Even if there's not a serial killer running around, just lock your doors because you never know what kind of person is going to walk in just randomly.
You may never know if your neighbor is this crazy.
Yeah, you may never know.
Person, you know?
Exactly. So be safe, lock your doors, and...
bolt your windows.
Don't bolt your windows. Maybe close your windows at night.
That's a good
word of advice. I know you love that fresh air, but as another podcast puts it, the Morbid Podcast, fresh air is for dead people. Because you leave that window open, someone's gonna walk right in.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So.
So yeah, thank you very much for listening to us. If you made it this far, we'll see you next week for a Spanish episode.
Yes.
If you like our Spanish episodes, then. We will be doing them in the future.
Yes, we will.
And for our 20th episode, we're going to do the Spanish version of The Conjuring.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a little celebration episode.
For our 20th episode.
Yes.
We're going to be counting them in 20s.
Yeah, we are. And thank you very much for listening. This has been the Disconnected Podcast with Angel and Jesse. I'm Angel.
And I'm Jesse.
And we'll see you next week for a new episode. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.